the whole notion of network effects is that when one individual joins a system, all of the existing users must also get incremental value out of that new additional person. And so we think a lot about how do we add value each time a new human being joins the platform.
Welcome back to How I Launched This, a SaaS story from Google Cloud, a podcast about the CXOs and founders of SaaS companies and some of the most innovative players in the game. This is where we bring interesting and thought-provoking technical conversations with SaaS product builders to you. It's Stephanie Wong, developer advocate for Google Cloud.
And I'm Carter Morgan, developer advocate for Google Cloud. And today on the show, we have Val Yermakova, co-founder and CPO of Warmly. Also, here's a surprising fact about Val. She went to the same high school as Stephanie.
Yes, go Vikings. So Val has to have one of the most interesting backgrounds out of any guests we've had on the show. She's lived in at least four countries, is a Krav Maga and Muay Thai fighter, a circus aerialist, a figure skater, and someone who's passionate about conscious leadership, nonviolent communication, and more.
And on top of all of that, she's also CPO and one of four founders of Warmly, which is a technology company focused on delivering warm intros to warm leads weekly. We're really excited about this conversation. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Val.
Whoa, that's quite the intro. Thanks for that.
Yeah. And so, of course, we're dying to know more about all of those things. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and some of those hobbies that we listed?
Yeah, totally. I'm actually originally from Belarus. So that's one of the four countries that I've lived in. But before I started a B2B SaaS startup, I, as you alluded to, pursued a whole slew of different interests. I did melanoma research as an intern at a lab in Stanford. Then I did a Fulbright in China, where I looked at censorship practices. Then I finally joined Google for a real job as a data analyst on their safe browsing team. Then I went into design at Google. And all of this goes to show that I just really have always loved learning about different things and not focusing in on one specific thing, which made this idea of starting a company for me just perfect, because it is one of the best ways to constantly be in a place where you have to learn a ton about really random things like GDPR compliance or HR practices.
Right. And it sounds like you're just good at learning things. I remember you said, maybe I'm wrong on this, but did you say you learned Chinese to get the Fulbright scholarship, or was it like immediately after? How did that work?
Yeah, that's true. When I was applying, I applied to the Fulbright, and on the application, I said I could speak Chinese. It wasn't true at the time because I was just so confident I wouldn't get an interview, and I did. And when I got an interview, I kind of panicked. I was like, shoot, the entire interview is in Chinese. I've been to Panda Express once in middle school. You know, I really just don't know any Chinese. And so I flew to China 3 months ahead of my interview and just studied Chinese on steroids, kind of developed a system to really optimize to pass the interview, and ended up learning enough Chinese to pass through it. And then the head of the Fulbright org at the time, I told him afterwards that I didn't know any Chinese when he applied, and he thought it was really funny and was quite impressed. So that's good. He wasn't mad.
That's like a perfect example of doing what it takes to get to your goals. You are not afraid to just shoot your shot and take those risks and do it. I'm actually pretty interested to hear how you even went from doing all of these things to deciding I'm going to start a company. And how did that all turn into Warmly?
I think I've just always known I wanted to start a company. I really love projects and getting really focused in on one thing. I guess it's risky to start a company. You know, people say it's a bold move, it's a big step. But for me, it never felt that way. It kind of felt like, well, why not? Why not do something? What's the worst that can happen? I fail? Well, that's okay. You know, I'll get a job in a year. Like worst case, I lose a year or two of income. I've always known I wanted to start something. I've always really liked ambiguity and spaces where there's just no clear path. There's no map of how to do the next step. Creating that map has always been really exciting for me, and starting a company was just part of that.
So you started Warmly. Was this the first company you started?
Yeah.
What is Warmly? Like, if you had to describe it really quickly for our listeners.
The gist of Warmly is that in a sales process, top of funnel is incredibly inefficient. You think about the spam that you get in your inbox or things that you don't want. That's one of the byproducts of that. And today, salespeople have a fleet of tools they use to parse through thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of contacts in order to find and qualify leads. Very tedious. So it's very time consuming. And Warmly aims to solve this by building out a B2B network graph of all of your company's professional connections. think your executive leadership, your investors, advisors, employees, customers, all of these people have connections that they would be happy to connect you to help you close the deals you need to close. So today, Warmly tracks where your customers go when they change jobs so that you can reach out to them for a new deal or an intro. In the next couple of years, Warmly will be the cockpit that anyone in a revenue generating position will be able to log into and find the most efficient way to leverage their company's network to land deals. I can give a brief example. Let's say there's salesperson Sally. She's going to log into Warmly and we're going to say, hey, Sally, you have 15% of your quota left, 2 weeks to hit it, and you sell to DevOps teams in Oklahoma for companies over 1,000. Here are the 10 people you should spend the next 8 hours reaching out to and building relationships with so that you can hit your goals. That's what we want to build for.
Yeah, that's huge because I used to work in sales as a sales engineer, but I would work with the reps. And one of the things that was really disruptive during our process was every time we had to switch account reps or territories and we would lose a lot of that rapport relationship. And it would just essentially just disrupt the entire flow because they would have a new person that they'd have to put as a point of contact. So I feel like if we kind of shift the thinking to realize that, hey, sales is all about the relationship that you're building. And when that person moves, you should move the account with it, or you should continue that relationship with that person. It's really hard to rebuild what you've already made.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one thing that is actually interesting is I love just how audacious you are with taking risks and not even seeing it as that. You were talking before this call about how this idea all came together. I know that when you created Warmly, you all met on a rafting trip. So can you tell me a little bit more about how that came about and what your ideation process was like?
Yeah, definitely. So Max and I, we met on an overnight rafting trip. And I think the second day we were skipping rocks by the water. And I don't remember talking about entrepreneurship or maybe some idea or some theory. And he turns to me and he says, hey, do you want to start a company? To which I respond, yes. And he turns and he looks at me and he says, no, I'm serious. Do you really want to start a company? And I turned around and I looked him straight in the eyes and I said, yeah, I'm dead serious. I 100% know I'm going to start a company. Let's do it. And so then Max had this idea for a mobile professional networking app. And so we kind of ran with that for the first 2 months or so. And then it wasn't really going anywhere, but it's okay. We're iterating. We're figuring out our problem space. We realized we needed more skill sets and more talent. And so we brought in Alan and Karina. So we had 4 co-founders total. I love them all very dearly. We're like a big old family. And so then the 4 of us, when we first met sometime around December, we all got together. And then in January, we all moved to Boulder together. And having never have lived together before, we all just decided to be in the same house. But it turned out pretty well because we ended up living again together in Hawaii.
Yeah. Why did you pull in more founders?
More skill sets, people adding different skills to the company that we didn't have.
Amazing. And then so was the first idea, was it the Warmly product that you have now pretty much?
Oh, no, not at all. The first idea was, it was going to be way better than this, of course, but it was essentially Tinder meets LinkedIn, a mobile professional networking app where you wouldn't swipe because swiping's Tinder, but essentially you would swipe on people to professionally network. I didn't go very far. And then we came up with this different idea called Push-Pull. It was essentially a community where you can give your pushes or the favors you're willing to give others, and the pulls or the favors you need from others. It's kind of like a favor exchange community.
Yeah.
Very cute idea. It's still live today and it's free, but we got a lot of feedback when we went through Techstars that this is great, but you're not going to be profitable for years to come. And we decided that we wanted to be profitable earlier on. So that's why we ended up going into B2B SaaS. But no 4 of us were experienced in B2B SaaS beforehand. We were all product people. So it was a really interesting foray into something we were very unfamiliar with, but now know a lot about.
Yeah, I can see that you probably learned a bunch of lessons along the way, including the one that you heard from Push-Pull. But are there any notable pivotal moments that stood out when you were transitioning into B2B and getting Warmly up and off the ground?
So we didn't know what we were going to solve for. We knew that there are a lot of problems in the business world, in the B2B SaaS world, but we had no idea what they were. And so we became obsessed with user research. I developed a really robust week-by-week system of researching and then documenting that and then moving on to the next stage. Before we landed on this job tracking pain point, which we had no idea existed previously, we talked to easily over 200 people. And over, and we kind of get stories of things that were very inefficient. We're like, oh, job tracking would solve this. Why don't we do that? So maybe the notable thing there is we're like, okay, we're doing B2B SaaS. You turn around, you're like, oh my God, what is B2B SaaS? Like, what do we do in B2B SaaS? And the answer is just an insane amount of user research, which we still continue on today. Every week we have UXR calls.
I love that because a lot of advice I see now is, oh, you can use 10 people to kind of index or target a market. Like, oh, 10 people is enough. If you talk to 10 people, good, you can go on. And you're like, no, I talked to hundreds and hundreds of people. I think that's just good for maybe our listeners to know. Like, sometimes you really have to dig deep into markets to really understand their needs. Getting back to like Warmly, it sounds like you have a different model than a lot of the industry does. And maybe that came from your research, but it sounds like you're not necessarily account-based. You said you kind of follow the person in the relationship.
Yeah, exactly. When you think about Salesforce, in Salesforce, you have, let's say, Asana. It is a company and account object of Asana, but you don't actually sell Asana, right? You sell it to Amy from Asana. So what happens when Amy leaves Asana and she goes to work at Shopify? It's a really messy process. Sometimes you have to check that she's no longer at the company. Do you have her new email? Who's responsible for Amy? Is Amy in a different org now? Is a different SDR and a different territory team responsible for her? And our philosophy is that Asana isn't the thing that's most valuable to you. It's Amy, because Amy's going to go to a bunch of different companies throughout her career, and all of those companies could be your clients.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to track the person instead of the entire entity or the company itself, because that's really broad when you think about it. But when you think about it from like a point-to-point or peer-to-peer standpoint, it becomes a lot more targeted. And I feel like you can clarify that specific person's pain points and allow them to really be a champion of your product or service, even as they move companies, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thinking about the entire challenge in this space, why isn't everyone or other companies in the SaaS space already doing something like this?
Yeah, we thought the same thing. And turns out that accurately tracking job changes and building network graph is quite technically challenging. Also, every company cares about different types of people for different reasons and has different ways of processing those contacts. Let's say, for example, your CRM says, Bob Smith, customer success manager at Boeing. Cool. So now we as Warmly have to find who the correct Bob Smith is on the internet. Then let's say Bob changes from Boeing to Air Canada. Who on your sales team needs to know that? Who on the customer success team? The BDR team? Maybe your exec team needs to know. And then when Bob gets a board seat on SpaceX, who should know? Do you care? If Bob is on a sabbatical, who needs to know when, how? And in all of these scenarios, what is the kind of outreach you should be sending to Bob? Like, who on your team should be sending what language to this mythical Bob? And how is Bob going to be passed around internally in each company? The answers to these questions are, they're all solvable problems, but they're quite nuanced and require a really deep understanding of how revenue orgs work at different companies.
So then how do customers interact with Warmly? You know, one of the salespeople that's managing an account, something like that, do they have a dashboard? Do they get emails come in? Or what is it that they're seeing and using?
Yeah, the answer is both. So part one is we'll plug into their CRM, so their Salesforce or their HubSpot, and then we start monitoring the contacts that they want us to monitor. And anytime we detect a change, we send an email to the relevant person saying, hey, Bob is now at Air Canada. You're responsible for the territory of Air Canada. Air Canada's in your jurisdiction. Make sure you follow up with Bob. And also talk to the former person who was responsible for Bob. But the way they interact is we plug into their CRM, they get an email, they click a button, they go into the dashboard, and they do their thing.
Nice. So it's kind of giving everyone more actionable insights, allowing them to get the information at hand, but also figure out, okay, what do I actually do with this information to enable me to have better sales experiences with my customers? I know that you are actually a part of the Google Cloud partnership, and I wanted to know a little bit about how that's influenced your ability to get up and off the ground as a company so far.
Oh man, it's been integral to our company functioning. Not only do we run on G Suite, our app and backend runs and scales on Google Cloud Platform. When we were truly early stage, Google Firebase was perfect for us to iterate on product ideas very quickly. But now that we've scaled up, GCP is truly exactly what we need.
That's really interesting. I always love hearing about the technologies that people use. Did you start off with Firebase and all that immediately, or was it something different, or how'd that work?
Yeah, we did. We started off with Firebase immediately.
So the next 5 years, what's exciting? What's coming up for Warmly? How's it going
to
grow?
This cockpit that I was alluding to earlier of just anyone in a revenue generating position will be able to log into our dashboard, and we tell them the most effective way to leverage their company's network. We're really excited about getting rid of cold outreach. It sounds like a very bold statement, but we believe in this idea of network sales, and we want to help companies build out a network sales motion so that way they're not spending so much time on an inefficient top of funnel process.
Yeah, yeah. And all of this sort of sits around this idea of networks, right? Network effects. And we were talking before the call about what that is, and you have opinions on it. So can you tell everyone, you know, what is the gist of the network effect and what are your thoughts on it?
Our lead seed investor is NFX. So we care about network effects. And the whole notion of network effects is that when one individual joins a system, all of the existing users must also get incremental value out of that new additional person. And so we think about that a lot in terms of if salesperson Sally, if she joins Warmly, in what ways will the rest of her revenue org benefit from what she brings to the table? So she's going to bring in the network that she has. She'll bring in the network that she continues building and documenting. And we think we don't want it just to be a each person joins and gets 10 units of value. Each person who joins needs to give everybody else 11 units. And then the next person gives everybody 12 units of value. And so we think a lot about how do we add value each time a new human being joins the platform?
Yeah, well, I think that's interesting because it ties back to some of the other themes we've heard on this show before about companies that are built around this idea of product-led growth and having an agile product delivery strategy. And basically, it says that every feature that you introduce to your product should add value, right? Like it should not just be an incremental feature. It needs to be something that has a lot of value for the customer and the product itself, and you should be customer centric. So it seems like this applied to more of this network effect landscape. It's still very applicable, but just so more so shaped around how everyone added to the network needs to be just as valuable as well. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
One thing I thought was really interesting, you talked earlier about how Warmly is at a place now where it's starting to try and learn what bigger customers need and how to scale up to bigger customers. And I thought you were doing something that I think is ingenious, and it was called the Product Partner Program Waitlist.
Something like that. It's a design partner program.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because it really was eye-opening.
Yeah. So we've mostly sold to smaller companies, and now we want to move up market. Our product's just not ready for up market yet. And we have a whole slew of assumptions that we have about what bigger companies need. And we realize we can't just start building for that because we don't know what they actually want. And so what we're doing is we're coming up to these bigger companies and saying, hello, our product's not quite ready for you yet, but we'll give it to you for free in exchange for user feedback. And the thing that you get is you really get to be part of the product market fit startup journey, and your advice and your input shapes where a product ends up going. So it's exciting for certain kinds of people who work at bigger companies because now they get to kind of be part of a startup too.
Yeah. And it kind of brings us back to the idea of having a lot of focus on user research, what you did in the beginning of the company. In this case, you're continuing that research by bringing people's feedback back into the product development. And I'm sure for you, it's also a good strategy because these companies will already be part of the ecosystem, be a part of the community, and feel like they have input into the future. And you also have someone bought into your product at that point.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
One question I wanted to ask, when you first started out, how did you figure out like pricing and all that? That seems to be a really hard problem for most people.
That's something we are still iterating on and figuring out what is our true value add to different businesses. When we first started, we really just chose a pretty random number. And since then have realized that the random number we chose was far, far too low given the value we give, which is great news for us. It's a nice validation that our customers are making a bunch of money from the data that we provide them. Part of the design partner program is them helping us figure out an appropriate pricing bundle. One of the perks that they get is 50% off for life. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, but they're going to help us figure out how to price appropriately for bigger companies because we've mostly sold to smaller ones and we're still learning how to price for enterprises.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to learn there about really listening to your customers and trying it out with the market to see what they'll accept. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, and that's something that you'll just have to continue to iterate off of as times change and you figure out how much value that you're continuing to bring to your customers, as you said. I'm sure also this year, because 2020 has just been hectic, but COVID has obviously had an impact on everyone. And so I'm curious how it's affected your strategy from a product perspective, and then also how you manage the entire team that you are a part of as well.
I actually don't know what life pre-COVID is like, because we launched the product as it is in the middle of COVID. COVID kicked off in March, and that's when we launched and started selling. So we've only ever existed during COVID.
It's like your company and your product is like a COVID baby.
Exactly. And we've been remote first. I mean, we were all living together in Boulder, and then we ended up living together in Hawaii again. But for the most part, our team is all over the place. And so COVID has been the only reality we've known, and it's going good so far.
One thing I actually wanted to ask you about, and I think this is in your bio, but it's related kind of to running teams. You know, teams are made up of people. And it seems like you have a big focus on, I think, what we call soft skills a lot of time. But you talked about conscious leadership, nonviolence communication, T group and authentic relating, which I haven't even heard of. So do you want to talk about that a little bit? And how does that apply to the company you're running?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are a lot of buzzword, kumbaya circle type buzzwords. I'm really into kumbaya circle kind of things. Oh, it's incredible. I think about it a lot, and I bring it into our company culture. So every 2 weeks, I lead a mental health check-in. We'll create some sort of workshop on one of these topics related to conscious leadership or authentic relating to help everybody in the team, including myself, work through and practice the skills of self-reflection and understanding your own triggers and your emotions, understanding the stories that you're building about other people or about events that may not actually be factual, but you feel them to be very true. And so I'll run workshops to help people practice receiving feedback and giving feedback and processing the emotions that impact you when you get something you didn't expect, you know, a piece of feedback you weren't expecting.
Wow. Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I know that you also have your own website and blog where you talk about some of these concepts. I looked at one of them that is titled, Are Your Emotions Serving You? And I just absolutely love all your writing. So yeah, tell us a little bit more about the concept of emotions and how they play into leading a company.
Oh yeah. There's some brilliant quote somewhere that someone said, something about like, if you don't know what it is, you can't change it. And with emotions, the reason why self-reflection is so important is if you're not consciously aware that you're feeling anger or you're feeling fear or you're feeling anxiety, then you have no power to control it or to change your outcome or to behave in a different way. And all of this conscious leadership-y stuff is all around recognizing the emotion that's surfacing for you and not pushing it away. There's this concept also from conscious leadership about recycling emotions. And if you feel anger, let's say you're angry at someone, you're peeved, they did something not nice, and you don't accept that you're feeling angry, you tell yourself, oh, it's bad, I shouldn't be angry, you know, I'm a calm, level-headed person. And you keep stopping that emotion. You don't let the anger, that emotion, literally those hormones run their course through your body. When you recycle your emotion, that turns into a personality. So if you've ever met someone who's bitter, they're likely recycling a lot of anger emotions and not processing them through. Or if you've met someone who you would describe as very anxious, they're likely feeling fear a lot of the time, but not seeing that fear to completion. They're kind of being like, oh, I'm afraid. Oh, this is really uncomfortable. I'm going to go distract myself with something. And when you don't feel the negative emotion through to completion, then you're running from it and you're not having your emotions work for you and help you move into a better place.
I really love that, because that's something, even just in my personal life, I'm always trying to work on that. I do stand-up comedy, I act and whatnot. And so trying to really understand the emotions and like, yo, fear is data. Anger is data. And if I can listen to that, I can make choices based on that. But if I'm not listening, like you said, it's going to make choices for me and I might not like them. You know?
Absolutely. And the amazing thing is that sometimes fear or anger can teach you something about yourself. It's something you had no idea that like, oh, wow, I really don't like this kind of thing. I didn't previously know I didn't like this thing, but now I know.
That actually is really relevant to me in my personal life too, because a lot of people have been telling me to journal more, because you can then recognize those emotions. The awareness is step one, and then you can find trends throughout time, like, oh, I noticed that I'm feeling anxious during these times in the last month. And then you can see it from an outside perspective, as opposed to having those reoccurring thoughts happen in your head every single week and not taking a step back from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the anxious bit. I am definitely a person who intend to have quite a bit of anxiety. And anxiety is this amazing thing when you learn about it. Really, it's just fear underlying. When you feel fear, let's say it's minus 10 cognitive points. It's the worst feeling you can have. It's minus 10. If you start to worry about the fear, then that's minus 8 points, because you're kind of pretending that you have some control over a thing that you're fearing. And control feels better than just free fall fear. And so people who are in a worried state of minus 8 points, but repeat that worried state over and over again, become anxious people. But really what's underlying that worry is this fear that a lot of anxious people just completely aren't even aware that they're afraid of something. They're just feeling worry and they're not letting themselves feel the fear, because the fear feels so much worse than the worrying. Because you can control the worry, but you can't control the fear.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't looked at it like that. I really like it. This actually kind of leads to my next question, because I've always thought that a lot of these emotions are physical, right? I try and rationalize away a physical thing, like fear has a specific way of organizing my posture, a specific breathing pattern. And you seem to have done a lot of very physical things, which I find kind of rare for the field we're in, tech, but aerial circus or Krav or all these other things. When you go and find these new passions, are you afraid? Are you scared? Are you excited? Like, how does it work? What's driving you?
I really like intense sports. I really love martial arts, and Krav Maga was my favorite things to do. And it's because you just need such intense level of focus, especially people who just were typically overachievers, likely to have anxiety. They like thinking about a lot of things at once and worrying, like, am I good enough about this? Am I whatever? You know, lots of self-talk there. But when you're doing something that's really intense, like hanging from a rope in the air upside down, where you could totally just let go and snap your neck, that requires such a deep level of focus. And I find so much serenity in this. The world disappears because my physical body is at risk, so therefore I must pay attention on this one thing.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I do circus arts too. And then also I just picked up kiteboarding, which is super difficult and
so hard.
Dangerous as well. But yeah, I don't know if you've read Stealing Fire, but they talk about this idea of being in a flow state and trying to channel that into your day-to-day work. I'd love to be able to figure out how to take what I do during these sports and apply it to what I do when I'm working, when I'm doing things at Google and beyond, as opposed to seeing it as an escape per se.
Yeah, absolutely.
Val, thank you again for coming in. You didn't mention it. I think you're a little too humble, but Forbes 30 under 30?
Yes, that is news as of this morning, actually.
Congratulations and well deserved.
Awesome. Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you.
We can't wait to see you do so many more things. I feel like I'm going to see you become a pilot and then break the world record for longest time on an aerial silk or something. So can't wait to see where you and Wormley go next.
I am excited for me breaking that world record while being a pilot.
Yes. All right. Thanks so much again, Val.
All right. Thank you.
Oh my goodness. That was an amazing conversation. I always love hearing the stories of the smaller startups as they begin to grow. There's just so much to learn there because they traverse all levels of the business, from the initial like ideation phase to the customer research to the scaling up. That was so exciting. What did you think, Steph?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like she loves wearing a lot of hats, and this is a perfect role for her. She always knew she wanted to start a company. And then on top of that, she has varying interests across so many different facets, from circus arts and Muay Thai and doing her Fulbright scholarship in China. So, you know, it's clear that she's not afraid of taking risks.
Yeah, that was definitely true. And I think that came back even to the anxiety part that we talked about at the end, or the emotions and how to manage them and deal with them. When you're in an entrepreneurial role, there's so many risks involved. I think you have to be able to manage the person side of it to really be able to accomplish or achieve at a high level sustainably.
Yeah.
And so that's something that it seems like Val has a strong grasp of.
Yeah, I know. It's like the step number one is being aware of your emotions. And then after that, you can figure out how to work with them and live with them and be able to not put it on other people, including your team. And that's obviously been a foundation for her as a leader, especially so young, you know, to have that level of awareness in your 20s when you're already starting your first company, I feel like is pretty impressive.
I'm 34 and still lacking. One thing I thought was interesting, you said you had a sales background. And so tools like this seem like they would have helped a lot in just reducing a lot of the tedium of having to go and check, does someone still work here? Is someone still active there? Would you have used something like this if you were still in that sales engineering role?
Yeah. I mean, I think the people I worked with, the reps would have really benefited from it because there was just no insight into that information. It was all just based on your own research on LinkedIn and figuring out, okay, this person's left. I can't leverage them anymore. Yeah. I can see its amazing potential in just any company.
Yeah. So, all right. There was one thing we didn't mention during the show that I really wanted to plug right now. It's Valley Space. It's Val's blog. It has a lot of really interesting information. And Steph talked about reading one of the articles earlier.
Everyone, again, that's VALY.space, valley.space. So everyone, thanks again for checking out this episode of How I Launched This, a SaaS story from Google Cloud. I learned so much from Val at Warmly. We're going to be bringing up back on guests from more companies doing some of the most innovative work in the SaaS field.
So stay tuned for our next episode. And if you want to keep up to date with the latest on SaaS, Google Cloud, and this show, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, rate us on Apple Podcasts. And if you like this episode, be sure to give us a share on social.
And reach out to Carter and I with suggestions, comments, questions, and we'd love to keep the conversation going online. Check out the show notes for more information on Warmly, mental health, and how you can engage with Carter and I. We'll see you all next time.